Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
A lot of the conversation around the Israel-Palestinian conflict and everything that went on in Israel is often reduced to numbers, which is a complete absurdity on a logical level. We know that. But yet somehow it seems to be the only metric or one of the most important metrics used. Joining us on the line is Sean Sachs. He's the senior researcher at NGO Monitor. Very good morning, Sean. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, Howard. Great, thanks. How are you?
I am good, thank you. It's a very difficult one because we know this in media. If it bleeds, it leads. And therefore, the more it bleeds, or the more who bleed, the more that leads. How do we move away from this? How do we separate this, especially around this type of war in Israel?
Well, I think the most important aspect to look at is, if we're going to speak about what is reality and what is legal, is to use the appropriate legal terms. And what has happened is everyone focuses on, well, this amount of people have been killed, that amount of people have been killed, therefore whoever has more death is clearly right. And unfortunately that gets even more distorted when we say that, well, Hamas is firing rockets and Israel has an air force, therefore Hamas is right. And this goes on and on and on until eventually you've completely distorted any type of legality, any type of reality. And the answer is no matter what Israel does to defend its own population, it is perpetually always going to be wrong.
And that's become the cycle, because no matter what I've seen over this, and I've mentioned it to listeners numerous times, is that there's almost this incredible separation between reality and emotion. So, you know, we continue to see things, Israel and genocide and ethnic cleansing, apartheid, these words are just thrown in there, but no one holds Hamas accountable, or very few will say, hold on a minute, what's happening in Gaza right now under Hamas to Palestinians? So it's a deliberate silencing of reality.
Absolutely. And I think, look, something very important to point out is we all agree even one death is a tragedy. The death of a child is even more so. And in a war situation, every single death of a civilian that is caused on purpose is murder and a crime. There is no way of getting around that. However, and this is very important, the death of people in a military setting, in a war setting, whether they're Israeli or Palestinian, is a terrible tragedy. But as it is, and this is very hard to understand, even for somebody like me who deals with this day in and day out, the death of civilians in a war situation is a terrible tragedy, but is not necessarily always a crime. And that is, again, like I said, it's a very hard thing to swallow emotionally, but that is actually the legality of the situation. And it doesn't sound nice when we print it in the media, and it doesn't sound nice when we need to stand at a protest and say this is the reality. It is a very hard thing to grasp and understand, and that is the reality. And again, when we look at numbers, people like to speak about disproportionality. Okay, but so let's play that game with regards to disproportionality. 4,500 rockets fired from Gaza at Israel. Okay? A third of those landed in the Gaza Strip. So let's say we're talking about 3,500 rockets fired at Israel. Does that mean if we're playing the numbers game, Israel can fire 3,500 rockets at Gaza just without care? Because that would be playing the game both
ways.
That's
perfectly proportional.
It doesn't work like that.
Well, even if you take it one step further, even if you accept the narrative about what happened at the mosque and the eviction, even if you accept that, is it proportional to send 4,000 or 4,500 rockets into civilian areas? If Israel did that, they would be told that that's completely disproportionate. But that's my concern, is there is no rationality. There just doesn't seem to be. I saw a very well-known South African figure posted on Twitter on Friday, I think it was, that how can you be blaming Hamas for everything? Hamas only came into being in 1985 out of pure frustration with Israel's occupation.
And that, I think, is going to be an excuse we're going to see more and more when we're just trying to talk about proportionality, suddenly everything done against Israel is going to be excused. And we see this over and over again. Hamas came out of desperation. They're firing rockets out of desperation. Mm-hmm. All of us remember 20 years ago, they're blowing up Israeli school children out of desperation. Mm-hmm. And this entire narrative of excusing anything done against Israel is becoming more and more common. And I say, thank God, South Africa, for the most part, has been immune to it. But we're seeing on the streets of Europe, in New York, in Los Angeles, where suddenly brutal hate crimes against Jews is also being excused because of desperation.
Yeah, and the dangerous one in South Africa is the use of the word terrorism, because the minute you say that Hamas is a terror organization, somebody will say, yes, but so was the ANC, which is a phenomenally illogical statement. So does that mean that no one's a terrorist organization? You know, are you saying that the ANC and Hamas were the same? Of course they were not. Of course they were they were not. Maybe, you know, yes, both were organizations. It doesn't mean it. It's just such failed logic. But because we argue on social media in very limited sound bites, it's very difficult to have any nuanced conversation around this.
Absolutely. And I think this is an important point that I recently picked up, and goes like this. Social media, especially the quick social media is like Twitter, when it comes to things like the Arab-Israel conflict, is turning into a cesspool. And I say cesspool because the other word I'd like to use, I can't say on radio. Something very important. When we are engaging in social media, especially on this issue, all right, my general rule is always think of the following thing. The person I'm engaging with, would I be happy to have a Shabbos meal with them? Could we sit around a Shabbos meal and have a decent conversation about Israelis, Palestinians, and everything else? Would it be a comfortable meal? And if the answer is no, it's going to devolve into a shouting match and screaming and murder and terrorism, then the answer is, well, why are you engaging with this person on social media anyway?
But doesn't that
How's that?
I hear it. The problem is then, does that mean in many ways we become silent on social media? Because it, as you said, it is a cesspool. And it is, you know, I sometimes look and I think, should I be engaging it? And then I go through this process that says, well, if I don't engage, who is going to engage? And I kind of feel a level of responsibility. So it kind of goes around and around. So I think you're right, because more often than not, even if I do engage, I simply get blocked. And not that I'm rude and I'm never offensive. To our listeners, I might be, but I try not to be on Twitter. Just by presenting another argument, I'm blocked. So I'm silenced anyway. And then you wonder kind of what the point is. So maybe there is no point.
I'm going to answer you the two points. Firstly, you are a media personality. So yes, you, unlike me, but the rest of us, you do have a responsibility to speak out, and you do have a massive platform that I think you use correctly. Even there are times, me myself, I disagree with you, but it's
never
your role and duty as a media person. It's your role as a media personality to speak out on every topic that you can. And I think that is important. My role as a researcher is to present information and factual information to people who make decisions higher up, wherever it is. That includes media personalities like yourself and decision makers around the world. Engaging in social media and silly arguments, I have never heard the phrase, you know, that thing that somebody said to me on Twitter, that actually changed my mind. I have never heard that phrase before.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think for me, some of my rationale for speaking out is just because if somebody does it, then others can kind of think it's never about the person that you're commenting to. It's who else is reading it, and that sometimes helps. But it's a very, very difficult one. Do you think there's been a slight shift in the last couple of days where we're seeing people maybe retracting, maybe being a little bit more balanced in their approach? Do you think that now the ceasefire has gone into place and it's holding, we will see a little bit more rational discussion?
I think we will, at least in the short term, because now the reality is coming to bear, and we are seeing that there was a lot of maybe disproportional emotion running during the time of the conflict. But I have a feeling that in the coming months, we're going to see many of these so-called human rights groups are going to try and stir up that emotion again and come out with reports claiming things like disproportional force, talking about apartheid, and really playing up the emotion that has fortunately simmered down a little bit now. Mm-hmm. So this, shall we call it this honeymoon period where people are realizing maybe we took it too far, I think will end soon.
All right, unfortunately. And that's where we leave it. Sean Sack, senior researcher at NGO Monitor. Thank you for speaking to us, and thank you for the amazing work that you continue to do. Thanks, Howard.